Hello and welcome to the 94 Feet Report. I am your host, as always, Eric Spropoulos. We are brought to you today, as usual, by Fan Essentials and Daily Fantasy Nerd. For Fan Essentials, use promo code 94 Feet at checkout for 30% off your first subscription of Fan Essentials. And for Daily Fantasy Nerd, make sure to check out the link on some of our episode descriptions and on Twitter. This is episode 3 of Free Talk Friday. If you've missed our previous two episodes, you can check them out on the site or on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. The structure of this show is really, you know, casual conversation. We don't bring up any advanced numbers. We just kind of talk off the top of our head, casual, you know, conversations you would have with friends or coworkers and stuff like that. We are joined again, once again, by Alex Spropoulos. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Always glad to be here on the third episode of Free Talk Friday.
So today we'll be talking, our main segment of the show, we'll be talking about, you know, top players slash prospects of who are 23 and under. And so this was actually inspired by Nate Duncan and the Dunked On Basketball podcast. They rank, you know, a bunch of these players by tiers. So what we're going to do is we're going to select our top 10 from a group of players that are 23 and under and rank them, and then talk about, you know, in terms of like building a franchise, which one would you pick, and, you know, obviously factoring in injury risk and stuff like that. And then we'll give our opinions on players resting games. So without further ado, I think it'd be best if we kind of go maybe, you know, three at a time, because I know we both agree on the top three.
Yeah.
So my top three, both of our top threes are Anthony Davis at number one, Carl Anthony Towns at number two, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, Greek Freak, at number three. You know, you can justify why you had them at top three, and I'll give my reasons. I think they're probably pretty similar.
I think that when you're looking at the group of young players in NBA, I think these three stand out almost in a class of their own. I mean, Anthony Davis, you really can't compare him. He's putting up, I think he's leading the league in points. You know, he's a great rim protector. And in that age group of young guys, he's by far and away the most developed and the most pronounced in his NBA career thus far, just having more years in the league. Carl Anthony Towns as well is just a very young natural talent, and you can already see him progressing from his first year to his second year. And the same thing with Giannis in Milwaukee. So I think those three guys are definitely the top three when you're looking at young guys in the league. I don't know why you'd have them that way.
Well, Anthony Davis, I mean, what he's doing this year, I mean, if you take him off that Pelicans team, what do they have, one win? I mean,
right, probably.
The guy's going off, he has, I think he's like still leading the league in player efficiency rating, and he's like number one or two in scoring. I know he just put up 35 and 14 yesterday,
right,
in a Pelicans win. I mean, just when he's healthy and when he has some kind of, you know, team around him, he's just almost unstoppable. He literally beat the Pacers last night on his own. Mm-hmm. Carl Anthony Towns, I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, even if we did these rankings like last November, I'd probably put him at number two.
Right.
That's how much talent he showed last year, and he's just continued to show it this year. Though the wins aren't coming, but that's not only on him, of course. And Giannis, the Greek Freak, I think is most improved player of the year right now, the leading candidate for me.
Probably,
the guy,
yes,
is averaging, he's on pace to do 22 points per game, at least 8 rebounds per game, at least 6 assists per game, at least 2 blocks, and at least 2 steals per game, which has never been done in NBA history.
Right.
And he's 22 years old.
Exactly.
And the Bucks are 500. So, I mean, honestly, if we do these rankings next November, Giannis might even pass Towns. I don't know. That's how good Giannis has been this season. I think Giannis has been better than Towns this season, but I think Towns will still progress to be better, if not the same level.
Maybe tied next
it's
year.
Kind of,
maybe
yeah,
tied.
The top, I mean, besides AD, 2 and 3 could probably switch, I think, in my opinion. Moving to number 4, this is where our lists just completely differ for
right,
the most part.
Yes.
I've got Kristaps Porzingis, and you have?
I have Andre Drummond.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and explain, I had Drummond at 7, so you putting him at 4 is significantly higher than I have him. Explain why you put Drummond at 4.
Right, so I think that Andre Drummond is one of those players in the NBA that is just a rebounding machine. I know he doesn't necessarily, you know, put up the most efficient stats. You know, he's a horrible free throw shooter, but I think that, you know, a lot of the focus has been taken away from him because of the fact that he plays in Detroit. So I think that Andre Drummond is very underrated, and I think that, you know, he's still young. I think he's what, 23 years old?
He's at the cusp of our
grouping, but, you know, he averages easily over 11, 12 rebounds a year in addition to 15, 16 points, which is extremely impressive considering that he's very young and that he doesn't, until Reggie Jackson came there, he didn't have that much talent around him. and he didn't have that proper coaching until Van Gundy came this most recent year. So that's why I have him at four. I think he's a little bit underrated compared to a lot of the other young guys.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit underrated too. I mean, I'm a fan of – I put him at seven, which is still pretty high if you're talking about this list. But my concerns with Drummond is that, one, the free throw shooting, you cannot play him. Now, I know that the rules have changed for Hakka, whatever. Right. But still, there are times when you cannot play him on the court because they can hack him. Now, the hacking has gone down, and that's not a serious concern, but it is a concern. He's still shooting 40-something percent from the line.
Right. But I think that if you can just focus him on shooting free throws, just have him practice it a lot, that's something you can fix, though, I guess.
Dwight Howard's been doing it for 10 years, and he's still shooting 50%.
I guess, but 50% is better than what Andre Drummond shoots, so...
Not concern about Drummond is that does he have an offensive game? The reason why I'm putting Porzingis because Porzingis is great on defense. He is one of the elite rim protectors and provides two blocks per game. And so Porzingis has shown that he can play defense, and he's not even playing at center, which is where most people assume he can unlock his full potential as a stretch five. Right now he's playing power forward next to the horrible Joakim Noah.
Right.
But Porzingis has shown that he can be a good, if not dare I say, great defender on the inside. Not as good as Drummond, but still not bad. He's well above average. And the offensive potential, 21 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, shooting 2 threes per game. He still provides 2 blocks per game, shoots almost 80% from the free throw line. He's the unicorn.
Right.
He can do both ends. Right. I'm concerned about Drummond being a focal point on an offense. Well, I'm confident that Porzingis will be a focal point on an offense.
Well, I think that one of the reasons, and I do think Porzingis is very talented, and in fact, in our last time I was on the show, I picked him to be most improved player of the year. But I think that another reason I picked Drummond is because, well, two things. One, he's proven that he can do it consistently over the years. He has 4 or 5 years of league experience playing in the league, putting up the consistent numbers. And also that he very rarely misses games. You know, he had, I think, like a couple years where he played every single game. So injury is not a risk for him for a young guy compared to some of the other guys on the list. Anthony Davis is a concern. You know, a couple other guys that we're going to talk about later also have injury problems.
Yeah. No, I think I'm putting Porzingis ahead at four. I'm putting Porzingis at four just in general, just not even talking about Drummond, just because he can do it. I think he will be a focal point on both ends for a team that can actually win. So I think Porzingis has got great potential. He's already showing the offensive potential, and his defense has come around a lot faster than people expected, considering the fact he's still very lanky, very skinny, but he can definitely hold his own in the front court. Number five, again, we differentiate here. I'm going with Joel, trust the process, Embiid. Everyone who listens to the show, and you know how high I am on Embiid and how much I've loved the process ever since he was drafted. I think there are a lot safer bets than Embiid on this list. And the players behind Embiid that I have, I'm not going to say them right now, I don't want to ruin it, but there are a lot safer bets than Embiid. But I'm telling you, this guy has got potential to be a player that I simply cannot pass up on. I mean, the guy looks like the second coming of Hakeem Olajuwon, who's hitting threes.
Yes.
Okay, he's blocking shots at an elite rate. Defending the rim very well. His rebounding is pretty low, but that's because he's sometimes on the perimeter shooting jump shots. He's got a great three-point shot for now for a rookie who we didn't think would be able to spread the floor this easily. He's got a high usage percentage and is still maintaining quality production. I think he's averaging like 19-7 with like 2.5 blocks per game in a minutes restriction. So you give him 5-6 more minutes a game, what is he doing? You know, like 10 and 3 blocks per game.
His potential's high, yeah.
And he's got potential, like Porzingis, potential on both ends of the floor. I'm putting Porzingis above Embiid. I think that's because of the injuries. And I think that Porzingis has obviously done it for a little bit longer in more NBA games than Embiid. But I think Embiid has just as high potential as Porzingis on both ends of the floor. So that's why I'm putting Embiid at 5. Who do you have at 5, and then why do you have that player?
So I have Andrew Wiggins at 5 from Minnesota again. I think that he's a very extremely talented player. If you watch the Timberwolves play, you know, you come to watch Karl-Anthony Towns, and then you also get the treat of watching Wiggins and players like LaVine, who I think we might touch upon a little bit later. But I think that Wiggins is supremely talented, unquestionably, on the offensive side. And I think that it's someone that if you put him on a team by himself, he has the ability to lead that offense and be a focal point in the offense going forward. And so I think that Wiggins is, for me, number 5. And I differentiate there because, like you said, I also considered whether or not injuries would be a factor. And I know that Embiid has missed almost two seasons, which is a concern. And, you know, with big men, injuries can be a problem.
Oh, yeah, this screams of like a Yao Ming, Bill Walton kind of thing, where they just cannot stay healthy for the entirety of career with tremendous talent that does not go to waste, per se, but is not truly unlocked because of the injuries, especially for big men. So I understand the concerns, obviously, there. My concern with Wiggins, not even a concern, my problem with Wiggins is I still don't think he's a good enough defender to be, you know, now you don't have to be good on both ends. James Harden's not good on both ends. Russ Westbrook, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, they're all below average defenders.
Right.
But those are just elite, unstoppable offensive forces, which Wiggins is not. But the problem that I have with him being his own focal point on an offense is that his lack of playmaking is a serious concern. Now, he is a small forward that, you know, small forwards don't traditionally pass or playmake unless you're like LeBron or, you know, Nicholas Batum, stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I'm pretty sure he averages less than 3 assists per game and has done so for the entirety of career, which is now 3 seasons. This is his third season. The lack of playmaking, I think, is a serious concern for me if he's going to be a focal point. The lack of shooting also, I think, kind of bothers me if I'm going to put him as a focal point of an offense. Now, of course, you can surround him with shooting, but if he doesn't have shooting around him, he could struggle because he doesn't playmake, he doesn't shoot well himself. This year, he's doing a lot better from three-point range than his career, you know, average. We'll see if that can maintain. But if he reverts to his career averages, his assists per game is low, he's not a very efficient player, and he doesn't really do it on both ends, which, I mean, not everyone does, but if you're not going to play a lot of great defense, you got to be really great on offense, which he hasn't been yet. He can be, but the way his game is styled for kind of mid-range, kind of inefficient shots, I don't know if he's going to be an unstoppable force, like top 10 offensive player.
Right, but and then look, I think he does have the potential to become that if he were to become the focal point of the team. Because right now, he came in there, he had 1 year, and then Karl-Anthony Towns came in, and that sort of became the focal point of the team as opposed to him, although he was supremely talented, number one pick the year.
That's the reason why I think because the hype and comparisons of him to players like LeBron, like all-time greats when he was getting drafted number one, almost puts the pressure on fans and analysts to think, you know, come on, Andrew, you got to play make more. You got to be play more defense.
He's just a number
one
style.
Pick. He's not a number one pick. He's not just a number one pick. He's the number one pick who was hyped up to be essentially, I think Sports Illustrated said he was the next LeBron.
I think so, yeah.
Not 100%. So he's got pressure to do more than just score from the mid-range, which is what he's essentially done for his career so far. But again, he's got time to grow. Good thing he's in the right place. Hopefully he's in the right place. Hopefully Thibodeau doesn't, you know, mess up that young core. If he keeps the young core, he's got time to develop with Towns and LaVine and you know, other players. Chris Dunn, stuff like that. So I have Wiggins at 6. I think I've already talked enough about, you know, my concerns and, you know, the kind of benefits of having Wiggins. Mm-hmm. So who do you have at number 6? You can explain a little bit more.
I have Porzingis. So like you said before, I too am very high on Porzingis. You know, I would like to see him do it for a little bit longer, you know, just in the league, just prove himself a little bit more. Maybe the end of this year I'll move him up to 3 to 4 or something like that. But I think that, you know, like you said before, he's well-rounded player. He's very talented, and he, like you said, he's also not playing at his design position. He's not playing at center yet. So I think that if the Knicks move him over, or if he were to be the franchise player on your team and you moved him to center, I think that you would see a dramatic increase in his production. So, and then moving to 7, I have Jabari Parker from Milwaukee. I keep Parker low because I think that, well, again, factoring his injury risk, I think that, you know, his history is a concern, but I think that this year you've really seen him take off in terms of his unlocking his potential, and what we saw and what people were talking about when he was coming out 3 years ago after Wiggins in the draft.
So I have Parker a lot lower than you do. Well, not a lot lower. You have him 7. I'm going to say I have him at 9.
Right.
And at 7 I have Drummond. So we've already talked enough about Drummond. So I guess I'll talk about my number 8 and why I have number 8 him above Jabari Parker before I get into Parker, mm-hmm. and then you can comment on my number 8, of course. Okay. So I have Miles Turner at 8. I mean, talking right now, I think I'd be okay with switching Jabari and Miles Turner, but as of right now, I think I'm going to go with Turner. I mean, I think that Turner's got – I don't know what it is about Parker's game that kind of bothers me a little bit, but, I mean, you look at Turner and he's got – and he's got, you know, like 15 points a game, 7 rebounds per game. He's efficient. He can block shots. He can develop. He has a nice jumper. He's developing. He's young. I think, again, he's not someone. He's someone like I think that could be a little bit better than Andre Drummond in when he fully grows up, because I think he's got a little bit more natural offensive skill that is there to unlock. Unlike Drummond, who I think is, you know, maybe like a Dwight Howard who doesn't really, you know, he does better with pick and rolls instead of post ups. You know, I think Miles Turner, you can throw into the post, pick and pop, he can shoot the J. Pick and roll, of course. And he's a good defender. He's not a bad defender. He's not great like Drummond, but again, he's younger and has less time in his league. He's only a second year. He's by no means a safe bet. I think he's safer than guys like Joel Embiid. But I think I have him at Parker only because I have problems with Parker's game that, you know, I think it's just the way I like basketball is the way that kind of turns me off Parker.
Right, what you're looking for in a player.
Now, Parker's a power forward. And so you don't necessarily need shooting from the power forward position, but he does not provide shooting. It's been acceptable this year from three-point range, but he doesn't take a lot, and in his career overall, his career averages are really bad from three-point range, so he's not a shooter. He's an athletic cutter and a great dunker. His defense has been really, really bad, really concerning. That's a real concern for the Bucks, and one of the main reasons why they don't play him and Monroe next to each other because they would just get scored on every possession because they're both not good on defense. But Parker's lack of D and lack of shooting kind of turns me off of him. I think he's really athletic. He's great at dunking. He's great at, you know, not necessarily playmaking, but he knows he's developing a great chemistry with Giannis, and they could be a really nice unstoppable duo in Milwaukee. I do have him at number 9, so I have him in the top 10 of players under 23. So I'm high on Parker, but not as high as I am on Turner, who I think is a little bit – I like – if you give me Turner, I think I can mold him into the player that can be a real focal point on both ends, while Parker, I think, would suffer on defense and, again, needs someone else to help him out on offense for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually have Miles Turner in my top 10 or 11 that I wrote down on the top of my head. And I guess the only thing that held me back in terms of putting him in that top 10 is that, you know, he plays on a team where the offense focal point is around Paul George. And so my concern would be that if you just took Miles Turner out from Indiana and put him on a new team as the starting player or your main young guy that you're looking to develop, I'm concerned that, you know, he might not be able to replicate the numbers that he's improving upon this year in going forward.
But I counter that by saying, what if I said the same thing with Jabari Parker? If I took him off Milwaukee and put him on his own team where he'd be the number one guy in offense, like, do you have confidence that he'd be putting up the same numbers at maybe in the same efficiency rate or something like that? I mean, I have concerns about him creating his own offense too.
I don't know. I guess I'm more sold upon not like Miles Turner's center. So I'm more sold upon, you know, Jabari Parker at the four or, you know, playing maybe a big three. I don't know. But I think that he would probably be a better fit for going forward in developing an offense around him as opposed to Miles Turner when you're just taking him and putting him as the focal point of a team. Moving to my 8, we talked about it before, Joel Embiid. Like you said, we both agree he's going to be Rookie of the Year. And moving to number 9 is his soon-to-be teammate, hasn't actually stepped on the court yet, Ben Simmons. I'm very high on Ben Simmons. I think that he is, and he is shown to be an incredible passer. You know, he is a very well-rounded player in terms of, you know, he can handle the ball. He can't shoot the ball yet, but hoping to develop that, he can pass. Yeah. And he definitely has the makings of what they would say to be, I guess, a LeBron-type player. He could become that because, you know, LeBron came in the league. He couldn't really shoot that well as well. So Ben Simmons has immense potential, and that's why I have him at number 9 for me.
I don't have Simmons in my top 10. I have him in my honorable mentions because, one, I've never seen him play in the NBA, in an NBA game, so I want to see that first, and I think it's kind of a little bit too risky and kind of, you know, a little bit too risky to put him in the top 10 of players under 23 when some of these guys have played three to four seasons, some of them have played at least one. It's hard for me to confidently put Ben Simmons in the top 10 ahead of guys like LaVine, you know, guys like Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell when he's never played.
Right.
You know, if we do this a year from now after Simmons hopefully will play a couple, you know, at least a month or two this season, maybe not, you never know. I just need to see Simmons on the court before I can confidently say he's top 10. He's got great potential. I'm worried about the lack of shooting, of course, but great playmaking, great handling of the ball. He should be okay on defense if he gives some effort. You know,
right.
He's got the size. So that's your number 9. My number 9 is Jabari Parker. We already talked about him and, you know, my concerns for him and why I put Miles Turner ahead of him. My number 10, we also differentiate here. I've got Bradley Beal, and I was torn between Beal or Zach LaVine for this spot. They're both putting up similar numbers. LaVine has jumped up to a 20 points per game scorer, I think a lot faster than people expected. It was before the dunk contest last year, a lot of casual fans were basically thinking he's only a dunker.
Right.
He's not a dunker anymore. He's a scorer now, and he's averaging, I think, 3 assists and 3 rebounds per game, so he's doing a little bit of everything, again, with a young core in Towns and Wiggins around him. But I'm going to go with Beal. There's something about Bradley Beal. I know he's almost always hurt. Every season he has to miss at least 10 to 15 games, and that's a big concern, and that's why when we talk about, maybe changing the order based on injury risk, I would. But Bradley Beal is an excellent shooter, better shooter than LaVine. I think he's got more kind of potential, more talent to just take over games with his scoring than LaVine does. He's averaging a career high. I think he's at 23 points per game this year for Beal, which is very good.
Good, yeah.
Incredible, even though the Wizards are garbage. So I think it's just the Beal's, kind of ability to take over a game with the scoring is a little bit higher than LaVine, and I think he's been doing a little bit longer in this kind of role of a guy. Of course, he has to stay healthy, but that's why I've got Bradley Beal rounding out my top 10.
Yeah, and for me, I actually disagree. I have Jokic from Denver as my number 10 player, and I think that I agree Bradley Beal is a very talented player, but again, my concern would be, if you would take him out and try to make him the focal point of any team. One, apparently he's not the most easiest person to get along with. And two,
that might be John Wall.
Might be John Wall, but John Wall's been there longer and hadn't had as many conflicts. And two is, can he do that when teams are so focusing on him first as opposed to him second? Because you have to address the play of John Wall when you're talking about the Wizards.
The problem I have with that argument, again, is that if I took LaVine off the Minnesota and put... LaVine is comfortably the third option in Minnesota.
Right.
If you put him on his own team, I think he would struggle more than Beal, I think. I don't know. I mean, they both probably struggle as the number one options. But at least Beal, when Wall is out, is the number one option, and he's the number two option.
Right.
So it's pretty close to being the number one guy. LaVine has never been a number one guy. He's never really been close to number one guy. This year, he's a close second. I think he's close to Wiggins, but Wiggins still gets the ball in his hands more. That's why I have some concerns in terms of that argument.
And to be fair, I didn't have LaVine over Beal. I had Jokic, who I think is, exactly. If you watch Denver play, and I don't think Mike Malone has been using him as well as
he could be.
And I think a lot of people have been talking about that on Twitter and other places, that I think that Jokic has great potential. He's a fairly good player efficiency rating, considering that, his minutes that he gets and the looks that he gets in that Denver offense. So I think that Jokic, he is a very big guy. He can score, he can rebound. And I think that in the coming years, he'll probably move up that list for everyone. He's just not getting the attention that he deserves right now in Denver, both from the coaching staff and from the fans as a whole.
It just there was a lot of people on NBA Twitter who were really hyping Jokic up, especially for fantasy basketball, which I'm really involved in. The problem is, one, he's been mismanaged by Malone. The rotations are abysmal in Denver. Malone does not know who he wants to play at what times. He started off Jokic and Nurkic. That didn't work out at all. Moved Jokic to the bench. Then Jokic's confidence was shot, so he struggled. Then he's back to playing this well, and now he's not playing Nurkic. It's a mess. The Nuggets really need a trade to open up the space for Jokic to just take over as the starting center. I don't know who they trade to do that, but they've got to make some trades, clear things up.
Right.
And I like Jokic a lot. I really wanted to put him on this list, but I don't know. I just chose a couple of guys ahead of him. So moving on to my honorable mentions, I've got four. We already talked about most of them. Zach LaVine is one of them. This is in no real order, by the way. Zach LaVine is one, Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell, and then we already talked about Ben Simmons. In terms of Booker, I was super high on him last year. I'm still high on him, but he's struggling really hard this season. His shooting, he came into the league, touted as a good three-point shooter. He's turned into quite a poor one, really, for someone who was, that's what is kind of his hallmark is the three-point shooting. But he's developed a nice playmaking game. You can kind of handle the ball more, play make a little more than people thought, but the shooting is really disappointing. I mean, his season so far has been very disappointing in terms of the hype he was receiving. D'Angelo Russell, he was injured for a good part of the season, so it's hard to tell what a season's like this so far. He's still showing great potential. He's shown games where he can just take over, ice in his veins, hit game-winning shots, take over games late. So I have more confidence in Russell than Booker right now. But then again, there were some concerns about him leading a team as a leading playmaker and point guard and be a real leader of a team, and some injuries that kept him out of my top 10. So you can mention some other
just
guys.
Just to toss in, I agree, and I have D'Angelo Russell as a honorable mention, Booker, Beal, and then one last guy I want to talk about is Russell's teammate, Brandon Ingram. I know he's been very disappointing this year in terms of the numbers that he's put up, but I think that if you took the time, he is one of those players, again, when you look at him and his size, and his skill set that you can really take him and transform him. And, you know, he's still very, very, very young. So he has the potential to become, you know, one of those guys where he can become the focal point of the offense in 3 to 4 years. So he's not on the top 10 now. He's not close to, I'd say, probably around 14 or something like that, 15. But he's definitely up there, considering in 3 to 4 years, he'll probably be one of those guys we're talking about at the top of the list.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he has the playmaking ability of Giannis, but 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, people were saying Giannis is a project who could develop into a serious playmaker.
Exactly.
Same kind of build. Giannis is a little bit taller, lankier, a little bit, you know, I think he's a little bit more athletic, really. But Brandon Ingram already has shooting. He has a shooting skill that Giannis still doesn't have.
Right.
If Giannis developed a shot, forget about it. He'd be unstoppable. But there is a chance that, I doubt it, but there's a chance that in 2 to 3 years, the Lakers have already given Ingram some, you know, kind of point guard duties by having him dribble up the ball up the floor. And maybe he could develop some playmaking, turn into a poor man's version of Giannis, which would be, you know, the Lakers would love that next to D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
Just quickly, in terms of if we wanted to factor in injury risk, I probably would switch LaVine and Beal, because LaVine hasn't really had any injuries and Beal has had a lot.
Right.
I might switch Anthony Davis and Towns. I probably wouldn't, because I would just bank on Davis being healthy.
Right.
And when he's healthy, he's a lot better than Towns when they're both healthy.
You can't be praying that Anthony Davis gets hurt if you pick. You want to have Anthony Davis.
Now, if I was a conservative GM, I might pick Towns. Some GMs still would probably pick Towns because of Anthony Davis' injury risk, but we'll see if he can stay healthy this season, because that'd be a big deal in terms of that. And I might move Embiid down a spot, but I probably, as I said before, I just gamble on that kind of once-in-a-generation type of talent that I think he has, like the second coming of Hakeem Olajuwon. So those are my three kind of changes I might make if we were actually factoring in injury risk. If you have any changes, you would.
No, when I set my order, I was considering injuries. That's why you saw I had Embiid a bit lower, and I dinged Parker some because of their injury histories. So I think that, you know, you definitely have to account for that, because these are young guys that, you know, injuries will develop as they get older. So you have to think about that, how that factors in now in terms of their play style.
Yeah, I mean, the best part about doing this is that we can kind of track this. You know, we've written this down, we can track it over the next months, years,
right,
to see, you know, which players do, you know, turn out to be as good as we thought they were going to be. So before we get to our final segment, I want to remind everyone that we are brought to you by Fan Essentials, a really great subscription service for your favorite pro sports team. So you go to fanessentials.net. Choose your favorite sport within your favorite league, and choose your subscription package size, and you will get a box of your favorite team's gear shipped right to your door every month. Again, use promo code 94feet at checkout for 30% off your first subscription of Fan Essentials. I really recommend it. I've used it for the Rockets before. It was really great. Gets you some really nice, unique gear for your favorite team. With that being said, our final segment of episode 3 of Free Talk Friday is going to be a little bit of an opinion segment. And really, the kind of controversial issue that has, you know, kind of come up in the past week is the resting of players.
Right.
We saw it when the Cavs rested all their big three in the game against Memphis, and then, you know, Marc Gasol rested the game before because it was a back-to-back in Cleveland and then in Memphis. There are takes for both sides. Some people defend it. Some people don't defend it and think it's kind of cheap. We've got these old-timers saying, oh, we would have played every game. But I think that if they had the information on their bodies, they probably wouldn't.
Wouldn't, yeah.
I think. Now, I don't know. There might be wired differently. That might be a thing. I don't think so. But my thing is that I understand that, you know, the players that are old or have nagging injuries. So it was rumored that Kyrie actually had a nagging injury and they held him out.
Right.
And LeBron was just resting because he's had such a workload. I mean, I saw people complaining about LeBron resting, but people have to keep in mind he's made 6 straight finals, which means he plays over 100 games a year, basically.
Right.
And plays into June, and then probably plays, you know, he stopped playing the Olympics, but, he could play, and he used to play in the summers, obviously, training to get better. Training camp starts in September. That's not a huge layoff
for
the best player in the world who handles such a big, you know, role on his team.
And the physical style of play
and the way he
plays.
I understand LeBron. I do not understand Kevin Love resting. He's not old. He has not played in the playoffs a lot. He does not have any injuries. I was a little bit disappointed that Love was resting, but you know what? I understand for title contenders to rest their players.
Right.
The Kings resting Boogie Cousins on Wednesday against the Rockets was almost inexcusable to me, because the team is not making the playoffs. They should, you know, they really, unless they want to get their lower draft pick, that's the only reason they should rest him. I think they rested him because Rudy Gay was out, so they knew they were going to lose anyway, so why not rest Cousins?
But maybe.
They didn't play the night before, and they didn't play the night after, so it's
right,
not a back-to-back, not a 4 games in 5 nights kind of thing. That was a little bit inexcusable to me. And the only problem I have is that, like, yes, teams do promote big games, right? The Grizzlies are probably promoted for the entire year. The Cavs are coming. The one time you'll get to see the Cavs, the NBA champions, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and they don't even show up. They don't even show up in Memphis. You can't even see them in the arena. They're not even in Memphis. And you pay these large ticket prices to see a backup D-League Cleveland Cavaliers squad play a backup D-League Memphis Grizzlies squad.
Right.
And I get the fans are complaining. I paid all this money. This is Christmas gifts, blah, blah, blah. I want to see the best players. You know, you jacked up the prices and they're not here. I understand that, but you've got to also analyze it from a perspective of a championship contending team who knows that if they rest this game and they rest another game in January and another game in March, they will have a little bit more energy for the championship run, which is all that matters for the Cavs and teams like the Warriors and the Spurs and the Clippers and Raptors, stuff like that.
Right, exactly. And I think that the way you have to look at it is this. As a person who is a fan of the NBA, yes, when you turn on the TNT game or the ESPN game and three players are sitting out, it dilutes the quality. You don't want to watch a game when LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love are not playing and Marc Gasol's not playing. It's not interesting. But then again, you have to think about it this way. Would you rather have those guys playing now and then potentially have them at the higher risk of injury and missing the playoff games when everyone's going to be involved and the focus is on and the attention is on, the pressure is on, and the games really matter? Not to say the regular season doesn't matter, but for teams, like you said, like the Cavs, like the Warriors, like the Spurs, like the Raptors, they know they're making the playoffs.
They know basically
what seed they're going to be, barring major injury risk, which is something they're trying to avoid by sitting out players in which they have three games in four nights or something like that. That is a decision that the team has to make in terms of how are we prioritizing the health of our players versus the mood of the fans, because the fans are going to be upset when LeBron that big three sits out. But are they going to be upset when they brought home the trophy, the Larry O'Brien trophy last June? They weren't. They were very happy. They don't care if their players, LeBron set us out the last 12 games, as long as they win the championship at the end of the year. So it's sort of sacrificing the now versus the long term. You know, you're prioritizing players' health and influence in the playoffs and later down during the season when the games are more crucial. That being said, like you said, Cousins sitting out against the Rockets on just a regular game, it is unexcusable, and it is a little bit frustrating and annoying, because unless they have some sort of deal with contingent upon Cousins not getting hurt, it doesn't make sense why they would sit him out. You know, it's not like he has any looming incentives that would cost the Kings another $20 million if he played that night. No, it doesn't matter. It's sort of disrespectful to the fans who are coming out on a regular, you know, Wednesday, Tuesday night and seeing the game. And that's what matters to them in that moment. They don't care about the Kings going down in the future. It's a question of, you know, I can understand championship teams doing it, but just regular run-of-the-mill teams who are just competing for the eighth seed or the not even?
That's my thing. I understand championship teams doing it with any of their players, really. Any of their key players, I understand them doing it. Which is why I'm kind of forgiving the Cavs for Kevin Love a little bit, because they've got higher aspirations than 98% of the rest of the league.
Right.
But the Kings resting Cousins, teams that are not contending, if you're resting guys who are not past their prime, if the Mavericks rest Dirk, well, they suck now, so they probably want to tank anyway.
Like, but
if
Harrison Barnes.
If the Mavericks want, there's no point for the Mavericks to rest Harrison Barnes. There is a point for them to rest Dirk, because he's old and he might actually get hurt and might have to retire immediately. I don't know. But teams that are championship contenders, I'm okay with them resting anyone, really, especially on, you know, Wednesday games in Memphis. Like, come on, man.
Right.
If it's not a national TV game, it's a little bit different. The reason people brought up, you know, no, they don't get fined anymore. Well, the Spurs rest their players on a TNT game, so David Stern said, no, you're going to get fined. But if you don't rest them on a national TV game, if you rest them on a normal league pass game, you're not going to get fined, because no one's going to be watching the game except fans of the teams. So, you know, teams that are contenders for real contenders for titles, I'm not talking, you know, playoff contenders. I'm talking about top two seeds in conferences or top three seeds.
Basically five teams in the league.
Four or five teams
can get away with it.
Yes. Other teams should be playing their guys, because one, they're going to need to play them to get, you know, higher playoff seed or make the playoffs at all. And two, that if they're in their prime or not past their prime, they should be playing almost every game, unless they have nagging injuries and you don't want to risk them long term. Obviously, James Harden has a sore ankle. I'm not playing him one night, especially if it's against the Pelicans.
Or it's a back to back or three of four.
Exactly. if they're not hurt or not complaining, you should play them because you need them, and you know the fans want them, and you know, the organizations should want them. So
yeah,
those are our opinions on players resting. Pretty controversial issue anyways, but that'll conclude episode 3 of Free Talk Friday. Alex, I want to thank you again for joining us. You can let everyone know where they can follow you on Twitter.
Thank you, Eric, for having me. You can follow me on Twitter at Spyro1495. Spyro1495. Just have a mixture of things on there.
Wide variety. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Eric Spyros, and you'll get all the podcast information there. Again, this was episode 3 of Free Talk Friday of the 94 Feet Report. We will be back again on Monday with our normal hour-long episode. See you guys then. Have a great weekend. Take care, guys.